Welcome to the Advance Your Art podcast, where we talk about the journey from artist to entrepreneur and everything in between. You've worked hard to hone your craft. Now take it to the next level with tips, techniques, strategies, and routines used by successful artists to grow their businesses and careers. Now, let's get started and have some fun with your host, Yuri Cataldo.
Brooke, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I am wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to start off this morning by asking you, how do you describe yourself and what you do?
Well, it's funny that you word it like that because I am very much a different person from what I produce. But I mean, generally, I'm a fine art photographer and writer, and I'm tending to produce very dark, surreal, whimsical works. But then me as a person, I'm also a motivational speaker. So I'm sort of like this really odd mix of happy and bubbly and dark and creepy.
That's a very interesting dichotomy. Do you think it's like one like part of your personality coming out in each individual thing?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, all my life I've been really optimistic and sort of annoying to all the people around me because of that. And I've always felt like that's my true self. But then I also love dark, creepy art. And that's just always been this other part of myself that really doesn't mix well with the personality side of things. But it does make for an interesting life because I can sort of have this one persona that really is me that's happy. And then that fuels my desire to create, which is much more, I would say, sometimes depressing and sad and creepy. But yeah, they work together.
Mm-hmm. They definitely do. I was looking at your portfolio and your photographs are beautiful and very, very thought provoking. And you're right. I didn't stare at them for a very long time. But you're right. They do enter more of a darker side.
Yeah.
I'd like to start by asking about your childhood. So you grew up in Pennsylvania, and I'm curious to see if you think that maybe where you grew up kind of influenced what you're doing now.
I think it definitely did, and I think that a lot of people will have that same reaction to say that wherever you grew up had some influence, whether it was direct or not. I grew up in a really rural area with lots of farms around and sort of like Amish Central. So I'm not Amish or anything like that, but I grew up with lots of horse and buggies coming down the streets and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that I always had this sense that nature was my favorite place, that being next to a stream or in a tree or in a forest was always just my happy place. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because, you know, I grew up the same childhood as my sister, and she had just the opposite reaction. She couldn't wait to move to a city and get out of the small town life. But I was always really inspired by it. So interestingly, my sister, who is also an artist, tends to create pieces that are much more industrial looking. And then I'm creating images that are very much rooted in nature. So I think that where I grew up had a positive impact on me, and I've always been inspired by solitude and nature and the way that you can connect that way.
Mm-hmm. So you and I had a little bit of a similar upbringing in the fact that I grew up very close to Shipshawana, Indiana.
Oh, yeah.
So very familiar with love, like, traffic jams happening because horse and buggies are on the road, and separate like just community where I always loved it because I felt like I could just time travel back to the 1800s.
Yes, me too.
Exactly. People spoke, you know, used different terms and different language, and then did everything by hand.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, and there's some kind of beautiful, you know, craftsmanship and serenity that's with that, and also it's also kind of annoying in a certain sense, just because when you're trying to get to work or trying to get to school,
yeah,
and there's somebody in a horse and buggy, and you're like, really, man? Come on. Like, just
exactly. But I grew up wishing that I was Amish, actually, because I loved that sort of timeless aspect of it.
Have you ever read any of the, like, the romantic Amish novels?
No, but I should.
Okay, you should definitely look into this. I have never actually read them, but the last time I was in Indiana, I stopped into this place called Essen House, which is like the Disney World of the Amish in Indiana. And there are just, there's a huge selection of romantic Amish novels.
Cool. I wrote it down.
That's as much as I know about them. I definitely think you should look into that.
Will do.
So you decided then to go to school. Is it Temple?
Yeah, which is in Philadelphia, actually.
Okay, so Temple. So you just kind of traveled down further in the state. Why did you then decide to head over to Philadelphia?
Well, I just needed to go somewhere in state so I could afford it. And that ended up being Temple because they had a film program. So I was searching for anywhere that I could actually get into because I was not a good student, despite my best efforts. And so I went to Temple where they had a film program and an English literature program. And I wanted those two majors when I went to college. So I made sure that I would have a well-rounded education there.
Were there kind of things that you were taught, like certain classes you took or different professors that you ran into that ultimately helped you long term that you didn't realize at the time?
Definitely. I mean, I think honestly, my whole career there was prepping me for what I would do outside of college and still does, because without realizing it, I went to college and studied storytelling. You know, I thought that I was studying the technical aspects of filmmaking and then learning how to pull out symbols from literature and creative writing and stuff like that. But really, every single class that I took served the purpose of teaching me how to tell stories visually or through writing, which are both massively helpful in creating any kind of art. So I went into it, and I remember taking a lot of cinematography classes and screenwriting classes and things like that. And they were really valuable in the moment for what I was trying to do. But now I still pull on those classes to figure out, well, what's the best lighting and what's the best story that I can tell in the most succinct way possible, which screenwriting is amazing for that. So I still learn from my classes that I took ages ago.
That's wonderful. That's great that you're able to pull from those. So yeah. When was it in college that you discovered your love for photography?
It really wasn't in college, actually. I had taken a photo class in high school that I very much did not enjoy. And I think part of why I didn't enjoy it is because I wasn't naturally good at it. I had taken this class thinking it was going to be really easy and I would just pick up the camera and take a great picture. And that didn't happen. And the class was also a black and white film class. And we weren't supposed to shoot people. So it was all inanimate objects and landscapes and things like that. So I started to become really disenchanted with this idea of photography that I was being given. So that's kind of why I went into filmmaking, because I thought, well, if I can't do what I want in a photo, then at least I could do it in a film. So I went into college with that mindset. And it wasn't until the very, very end of my college career, like the last 2 weeks, that a friend called me up, and we were living in different states at the time. And she had said to me, you know, we don't see each other and you're about to graduate college, so you're going to have more free time. So let's start taking self-portraits and then send them to each other and we'll just, you know, it'll be a fun thing that we can do. So we did. And then about 2 weeks in, she quit and she was like, I don't like this anymore. And I just fell in love with it, this freedom that I found in photography.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's wonderful. So is that ultimately why you got involved and chose to stick with self-portraits?
That's part of it. I also moved to Los Angeles very soon after I graduated college, and I, you know, had these dreams of being a big-time director or something like that, and then very quickly realized that with filmmaking, not only did I not want to live in Los Angeles long term, but also just the process of clawing your way up the ladder seemed really unappealing to me. And I was also disenchanted with how much your idea gets lost when you make a film. It takes so long to bring it to life, and there's such a big crew and so many people to go through, that I really liked the immediacy and the power that I had in photography to create my vision exactly as I want it in one day.
When was it that moment where you decided then switch over full time and make it more of a career?
It was kind of funny, actually. I was working as a receptionist, and I had this really fun routine where every morning I would get up at about 5 a.m. and I would do my photo shoot, and then I would go into work and I would edit my photo all throughout the day at my desk. And then around lunchtime, my coworkers started like learning that I had a photo every day. So they would come behind my desk and see what I was working on at lunchtime. And it was this really fun tradition of like more motivation for me to get up early and get it done. And they weren't great photos, but you know, I was producing something. So that's what I was doing. And then I remember very distinctly one woman who I was friends with at this office. She said, you know, I've seen way worse things in galleries. You should just try to put your work in a gallery. And I was like, oh, I never thought about that. It didn't occur to me that photography could be a way of earning money. Mm-hmm. So that's when I decided, well, okay, why not? I had only been doing photography for 6 months at that point. So I knew that I was still very young in my career, but I thought, you know, it can't hurt to write to some galleries. So I ended up writing to about 100 galleries in the first week that I decided I was going to pursue this. And I heard nothing back, maybe just a couple of no's, and that was it. Like literally one word emails that just said no. And so I started to learn that it was going to be a much more difficult process than I originally thought to start a career.
How long was it then from when you first had this idea to get into galleries till you got your first bit of photos in a gallery?
Well, it wasn't actually that long, but it was a little bit deceptive. So I would say it was about June 2009 that I decided I was going to start pursuing galleries. And then in September that year, I finally got an email from a gallery saying that they would look at my work.
Okay.
So I brought my work in. I brought in 10 prints that my friend printed off of her home computer, and I showed them to the gallery. And I remember they made two piles of prints, one with one picture and the other with 9 pictures. And they said, we don't like these 9 pictures that you brought in, but we do like this one picture. So if you can create a series based on this image, then we will give you a show at our gallery. So for the next few months, I got to work creating a new series, and I showed them and they agreed to display it. And then in February that next year, 2010, I had my first show opening. And it was at that time that I quit my job and I thought I was going to make it big. So it was about a year after I started photography that I got my first show. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that show cost $4,000 and I didn't sell anything. So whether it was a success or not is a different story.
Sure. I'm curious on that. So after that moment then where you had your first show and you didn't make anything from it, what were you thinking after that?
I was thinking, oh crap, this is not good. I was also really uplifted by it. Like I didn't expect to get a show necessarily. So that in and of itself was a huge success for me. And I have this uncanny ability to see the tiniest little triumphs as the biggest successes. Mm-hmm. So that works out in my favor because I have this blind trust in myself, perhaps when I shouldn't. So I went on thinking, well, I already have all these prints and the show is going to be over soon. So I took those same prints to a whole bunch of different gallery shows that whole year. So I started entering juried shows where it would be big group shows where they would say, okay, we're going to take, you know, 25 different artists and you can put a couple of prints in the show. And usually you would pay like $25, $50 to get into the show. So I did that for a while and I ended up having 13 gallery shows that first year, but they were all paid juried shows. So I would take those same prints to all these shows and just hope that some would sell. And eventually I sold maybe like 4 that year, but it still didn't cover the cost of the first show. But thankfully, because I did all of those tiny shows that year, I got the attention of a bigger gallery who was willing to represent my work. So that happened at the end of my first year of being professional, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. Great. And then how has it evolved since then? Are you still, with your photography, do you still go the gallery route? Have you diverged into other areas?
Yeah, it's a mixture now. So that first year that I was going full time, I had said to myself something really important that I still keep to today, which is I wrote down three things that I wanted to spend my time doing. And those things were creating art and writing and teaching. And I knew, I mean, since childhood that's always been my passion, those three things. So I decided that I would only take jobs or create jobs for myself that allowed me to do those things and nothing else, because I didn't want to fall into the trap of like accepting a wedding shoot or an engagement shoot or headshots or something like that, that would turn photography into a job that I didn't enjoy, because I don't like photography very much as a medium, to be honest. Like, I wouldn't choose to be a photographer in the commercial sense of it. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to ruin it for myself. So I decided I would take odd jobs if I had to. But in that first year, I self-published a book because I couldn't find a publisher. I started paying for my gallery shows because nobody would accept me. And I started putting out online that I was going to teach workshops, whether I was qualified or not to do that. So those are the things that I started doing. And that's sort of what I've continued to grow ever since then, because it's what I've always loved. But hopefully I'm doing it slightly more successfully now. So I'm showing in galleries and giving motivational lectures and writing books as well.
During those times when you decided just to go with it full on, it had to have been scary in some kind of way to suddenly put everything in this, I would say, not all your eggs in one basket, but to start doing this more full time. How do you approach fear and times when you're not necessarily sure of what you're doing?
Well, I tend to think that I am a bit of a spontaneous person and a little bit of a risk taker, or maybe a lot even, but I also have this very grounded side of myself where I'm extremely practical and extremely responsible in my real life, you know? So I tend to sort of weigh the risk and say, am I going to be hurting somebody else in my life if I do this? I don't really care so much about if I hurt myself as much, but you know, I'm married and like, I want to be able to, you know, help my family out if they need something. So I always say, do I have enough money saved up if this goes really horribly wrong? And is the risk only emotional? Because if the risk is something where like, for example, I quit my job, I went full time into photography, and I had enough money saved for at least a few months where I could continue living without making any money for a few months. And I said to myself, okay, I know that I can get some job if I need to. I know that if things are going really horribly, there isn't that much risk in this because I'll know ahead of time that I'm not making money and I have money saved and I can get a job. So in that case, the risk was just, am I going to feel like a failure? Am I going to look stupid if I do this? All those things that we struggle with when we're making a big decision. And so if those are my main fears, then I'm definitely going to do it, because I would rather look stupid in front of the whole world than never try something. So that's kind of my scale for if I'm going to do something big like that.
I also noticed on your website that there's a large charity component to what you do. What made you first get involved in charity and charities, and how do you work with charities now?
When I first got started, it was all because of this beautiful woman named Laura Price, and she runs an organization called Blossomy, where she brings creative individuals over to Calcutta, India, to teach creative workshops to shelter homes and survivors of human trafficking. So that's what she does. And she contacted me out of the blue and just said, I saw your photography and I don't know if you've ever considered doing something like this, but it seems like you would be a good fit for the work that I'm trying to do in India. So I wrote back and I said, that's great timing because I'm also really wanting to get into some sort of charity work. But as so many people know, it's so hard to know where to start with something like that. And you start to question, am I actually making a difference or is this really the best use of my resources? So it was a good trip. I went to India a few months later and taught my first workshop there. And I loved it. And I was teaching self-portraiture and self-expression through art. So that's what I did the first time. And then I started thinking after I went back a second time, you know, this is great that I'm able to do this, but what impact am I really having on the people here if I'm there for 2 weeks and then I go home every year and that's it? So the work that I do now has evolved into not just teaching these workshops, which I still do 5 years down the line, mm-hmm. but I've also started a photo school in India and soon to be Thailand as well. That's still working with the same community, underprivileged communities and specifically survivors of the sex trade. Mm-hmm. But this is a very practical photo education school called the Light Space that provides practical real world training to young women there so that they can make a living with their photography and hopefully move out of the shelter home system and you know, be on their own and independent.
Well, that's wonderful. What's the if listeners would like to hear or see more about that, is there a website that you have for them or
It's called thelightspace.org.
Okay. And when did you start that?
That was we officially opened our doors in November 2015. So we've had one graduating class and we'll hopefully be starting the next class soon.
Okay. That's wonderful. With the other side of what you do, the public speaking and the writing, what are some topics that you cover?
I do a lot of lecturing about how to be the main character in your life. So not just creating art, not just living for other people, but how can you sort of see yourself as the main character in your life where you're creating an active story around yourself so that you're living a more fulfilled and passionate life. So that's one of the topics that I'm extremely inspired to talk to people about because the number one problem that I see in so many people is that they have lost their true sense of self and their true why in life. And if you don't know what your why is, then I can't imagine being able to find meaning in many of the things that you do and the experiences that you're having. So that's one thing that I love to speak to people about. And then I love writing about the same topics as well as inspiration and sometimes technical things to do with photography and a whole range of topics.
Why do you think that people have lost the why in their life?
I think because we've been trained not to even ask, largely. I mean, there's this sort of herd mentality that you grow up with in a lot of different societies where, you know, you go to maybe public school and you're taught to blend in and try to, you know, not make ripples and make friends with everybody and not cause conflict. And not do anything that's out of the ordinary because people will make fun of you or people will look at you funny and you become afraid to ask yourself what your purpose is. And I think that it's also a little bit risky too. Like people see that decision to go after what you are truly called to do. It's seen as risky because it's entrepreneurial and it's not safe and there is no desk job for that. So I think that people lose even the question, like they don't even know to ask anymore. And I think that it's so sad because what if we all knew our why? You know, think of the amazing things we could do with the world if we all sort of jumped to our calling.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I was listening to a podcast yesterday. It was an interview with Peter Diamandis, and he said something complete, like very, very similar to what you're talking about. He's focused more on the technology side and the, you know, moonshots and getting people on Mars. But everything that he talked about came down to this is my purpose in life and this is why I'm doing this. And he like boiled it down to like three different things, which I thought was absolutely amazing that somebody as busy and was running, you know, I don't know how many companies he runs and was doing such amazing things was like, yeah, I focus everything I do down to these three important like things in my life and everything comes from that.
Yeah. It's amazing.
What ideas and or tips or strategies would you give to somebody who was just saying, okay, so I want to find the why in my life. Where do I start?
Well, where I started was in two places. One was to say, in what way am I different from other people? Like what really, when I tell people this thing about myself, makes them look at me really funny. And for me, that was this desire to create dark art. It was this desire to share this really strange part of my brain that didn't seem to fit the outside of who I was. So I knew that I wanted to share something in that vein that would maybe make people uncomfortable, but also make them confront something within themselves. Because I've always found beauty in darkness, and that has always been something that people have found to be very strange. But the other thing was just, like I talked about when I decided to become a full-time photographer, was asking myself, what do I want to spend my days doing? Because ultimately, our lives come down to what we choose to do with our time. And so much of our time is eaten up by things that we don't want to be doing. So if I had to ask myself, you know, what are the top three things that I want to spend my time doing? And then how can I link that to my purpose? Then suddenly you've built a business for yourself.
Mm-hmm. So with that business, and actually this might come into play with your personal business, are there books you recommend that people look into or online courses that help them take that why and take that idea and then practically extrapolate it out?
Yeah, I think that, so there are a couple of books. One is much more on the inspirational side of things, but I'm a huge fan of Elizabeth Gilbert. So her book, Big Magic, is amazing and so motivational. There's another book called The Icarus Effect, I think by Seth Godin, but I might be wrong about that, but I think so. And that book is incredible because it's all about, well, I mean, it's a metaphor basically talking about the story of Icarus and how we're told about that story is that Icarus flew too close to the sun and his wings melted. And so he fell into the water. But the other part of the story that we're not told is this idea that he was also told not to fly too close to the water because he would also then perish. But we don't get told that part of the story because it doesn't fit into our current social narrative. Instead, we're just told don't aim too high instead of being told don't aim too low. So that's what that book is about. And I think that it's just a beautifully written book.
Wow, I'm going to have to look into that. I had not, honestly, I wasn't familiar with that other side of Icarus. Which is
yeah, it's so interesting.
Surprising. Yeah. If there was somebody listening who was just starting out as a photographer and wanted to start their own business, what advice would you give them?
I think first and foremost is to understand your message. And I get a lot of pushback on this sometimes because every once in a while I'll talk to somebody who's like, you know what, I just want to take pretty pictures. I don't want to send a message to anybody. I just want to take my pictures and be done with it and have a business. But the fact is that whether you want to take pretty pictures or you want to write a nice book or whatever you're aiming to do, the fact is that you're sending a message, whether you're intentionally doing it or not. There's going to be a message embedded in what you put out there into the world. So it's best to know what that message is so that you can not only hone in on it and refine it and make it as accessible as possible, but also because that message is going to be what sets you apart and what launches your business into any sort of success. So I think know your message and get behind it and really understand how to brand it. And once you start thinking deeply about what your message is and how you can best communicate that, then all of a sudden you have a business structure.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's great. I like to take pretty pictures myself, and I put them on Instagram, and I call it a day. I don't call myself a professional photographer. So that's so I understand, you know, that like that I think a lot of artists have that difference, or having that problem of separating, like, this is what I really want to do with this is what the business side of it actually wants. Because, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people who take really pretty pictures and they put them up on Instagram.
But yeah.
They don't make a business out of it. That's just what they do.
Right, and you don't have to. That's the thing. Like, just because you take pretty pictures doesn't mean it has to be a business. But if you want it to be, well, then you better know why you're taking those pretty pictures.
Exactly. I'm curious on your pictures and how they've evolved over time, how do you approach pricing them? Like, do the galleries do that for you? Is there something that you have figured out over time that helps?
Yeah, it's a little bit of myself and the galleries when I'm selling in galleries. So when I first started, I had no idea how to price anything. I talked to another local photographer who had just exhibited in the gallery I was about to have my first show in. And I said to her, how do you do this? How do you start pricing? And so she explained what her prices were. And then I asked the gallery itself and I said, what do you think I should sell these for? I asked my printer, who is like a wealth of knowledge for me. And he explained his methods on pricing. And everyone had a slightly different method, but it allowed me to sort of center in on a good maybe middle ground for myself. And I didn't want to be too ambitious because it was my first show and I'd only been shooting for a year. So I knew that I should start kind of low, at least definitely on the lower end of things. But I didn't want to sell myself short. So what I did was I asked myself, how many hours did I put into each image? How much is the show costing me? You know, how much extra time am I spending promoting on social media and things like that? And once I sort of added up the amount of hours, I decided on a price that I would feel good about being compensated for my time. And then I think that as you continue pricing your work, as you grow as an artist, you start to really put a lot more value, not so much on the physical hours that you spend, but on the creation process and thought process itself, how much thought went into the images, how unique they are within your portfolio personally, as well as compared to the art market. And then you can sort of go from there. But I always touch base with my galleries and I always ask, you know, what do you think we can sell these for? Because they're the ones who have the expertise. I definitely don't. And usually artists don't have a very good outsider perspective on their own work in terms of pricing. So I usually ask and then set a minimum for myself that I feel comfortable with.
Okay. You're someone who is very prolific and there's a lot of things that you do. Are there rituals that you have, or routines, or programs, or apps that you use that organize your life or make your life easier?
Yeah, well, thank you for saying that, by the way. That was very nice of you. I do. I'm a very conflicted person because I see myself as being very organized, but then like right now I'm looking at my office and it couldn't be more of a mess. So I'm a little bit of a hypocrite maybe, but I like to be really organized, especially lately in my career. So I have the simplest tools that I use. I'm using Gmail, for example, for my email host. And in Gmail, there's this really great feature called Tasks, which you could get any app to do this for you, but I like having my email and my to-do list all in one place. So I always have tasks open where you can just write in your to-do list and then cross them off when you're done. And I love having that because it pops up everywhere on my phone, on my computers and everywhere. So I always keep a running to-do list that way. And then it makes me feel super accomplished because I can see the tasks getting crossed off, and that makes me feel so nice. So I have a routine as well, though. I don't use a lot of apps, but I'm really big on routine. So every morning I wake up and I answer emails first thing. I have a 24-hour turnaround policy for my email, so I always make sure the emails are completely answered very first thing in the morning, and it usually takes me between 20 and 30 minutes or so to finish them if I just pound right through. And then I move on to any business items that I don't feel like doing because I'm very much a morning person. And then once I'm done with that, I can be creative for the rest of the day. So that's usually my schedule. So then I stick to my business and get everything finished, but then also get to have fun.
That's wonderful. You mentioned before that you used to wake up at 5 a.m. to take photographs. Do you still, are you a morning, like an early morning person? Do you still get up at 5 a.m.?
Yes. I mean, it fluctuates, sometimes 5, sometimes 6, but usually in that range. That's my happy time. I love being up really, really early, and I love watching the sunrise and going out on early morning shoots. And that's just when I'm definitely most productive and happiest as well. I feel really renewed in the morning. So I have, a great appreciation for morning hours, especially because no one else is awake yet that I know. And it's just sort of my time to get what I need to get done and drink my green smoothie and, you know, all those silly things.
No, I've heard of other people describing that same thing, and I've always wanted to be an early morning person, but have difficulties with that. Do you, so is that something that just comes naturally to you, or have you trained yourself to enjoy getting up that early?
It does come naturally to me, but the funny thing is that, like, my husband is extremely the opposite. So there will be a lot of nights where I go to bed, and then when I'm getting up, he's just getting into bed to go to sleep, you know, and he's just totally a night person, and he works best that way. And I remember talking to him about this and saying, but don't you wish you were a morning person? And he said, why? If I'm just as productive at night, why would I want to change that? So now I'm always telling people, just be whatever kind of person you want to be, as long as you're actually being productive in those hours.
Oh, yeah. No, that's definitely true. What would you say is the best advice you've ever received?
That's a really good one. I mean, I feel like anything that my mom taught me as a child somehow comes back to be really, really good advice as an adult. And actually, I don't know if this is so much a piece of advice, but an experience that she gave me that was really meaningful to me. When I was really young, we saw a hot air balloon in the sky as we were driving, and it was coming down out of the sky. And so my mom said, do you want to chase the hot air balloon? And my sister and I, of course, definitely wanted to chase the hot air balloon. So for about an hour, we just drove through the back roads of Pennsylvania, like to the middle of nowhere, trying to locate this hot air balloon. And eventually we found it, and we watched it land in a field. And I've always felt like that moment in my childhood was so important, because she showed me what it's like to chase something that you want and to go on an adventure and not worry about where you're going to end up, because it's going to be somewhere beautiful if you look at it the right way. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something that always stood out to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a wonderful story. My aunt was a hot air balloon pilot. So growing up, I have similar experiences to that, but in the sense that we're chasing it to find out where it's going to go. and that's the wonderful thing with hot air balloons, is you can't control where it's going to go. Mother Nature will, you know, you can go up and you can go down. That's all you can control. And the wind and current, and, you know, will take you one way or the other, and you have to just basically kind of just let go and go with it.
This sounds like we need to do a photo based on this.
I definitely think so. That would be wonderful. So, Brooke, this has been fantastic. If the listeners would like to hear or see more of what you're working on or get a hold of you, what is the best way to do that?
My website is brookshaden.com. Super simple.
Okay, excellent. And I will put a link in the notes. So again, thank you so much. This has been a pleasure. I really appreciate your time.
Oh, I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Brooke. Have a good day.
You too.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Advance Your Art Podcast. If you like this episode, please go into iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. And while you're there, hit the subscribe button so that every single time I release a new episode, it will go directly to you without even thinking about it. If you're interested in hearing older episodes, please go to advanceyourart.com, where you can find the catalog of everything I've done so far, as well as contact information and projects I'm working on. Thank you again, and have a great day.